I've got to stay here, but there's no reason why you folks shouldn't go out into the lobby till this thing blows over. Yes.
The shrinking head. His voice will get higher pitched as the show goes on. That's what happens when your head shrinks.
Is it? Yeah, okay.
I've seen enough movies. I've seen Shrunken Heads, which is a documentary. And I'm Justin Sowler.
Yeah, he is.
We're Elitist Bastards.
Yep. We've been to the movies. We're here to talk about that.
What movie do you want to talk about, Ken?
I don't know. What movie should we start with?
What would tickle your pickle?
I am far too sophisticated to use that terminology.
No one's too sophisticated to have their pickle tickled. Let's be honest.
That's hoi polloi talk. I don't do that.
And I'm Steve Schanefeld, your co-hero.
I mean, I don't care about you.
Yeah, but he says things occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
Every once in a while, I need to identify my... People are going to be like, who's that other voice?
We've decided this week you're
not
allowed
to talk.
No, they're
not.
It's fine with me.
Yeah, we're not going to let you talk at all. I can't even read that goddamn list. What is that?
I wrote it in script, so you would be able to...
I see.
Oh, Conan, Spy Kids, Tabloid, A Better Life, Fright Night One Day, and then there's Shaun of the Dead and Horse Feathers, and then our upcomers.
Why don't you talk about Conan the Moose?
Conan the Barbarian is, I guess... sort of a reboot of Conan the Barbarian, obviously. For those of you who don't know who Conan the Barbarian is, he's a big shirtless, muscly guy that kills people with swords.
Yeah, but this one's got bigger tits than Arnold.
Well, he's also got more eye makeup.
Oh, well.
So, is that a fair assessment of Conan, Steve?
Pretty much.
I don't remember if I put this in my review, but I didn't want to get shit from Conan nerds about it.
If there
but
are,
the,
there
but
are
the no, I'm sure.
I'm sure there are. There's a nerd for everything.
But the basic premise of Conan is to just be badass and kill things, right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. There's nothing deeper there. I'm not gonna get.
Not.
I
really.
Mean, you probably.
I mean, there's mythology to it, but essentially, he's just a badass. That's all there is to it.
Well, that's what this movie is.
I saw a comic book cover. He seemed to be wearing cow horns.
He's not in this.
That's unfortunate.
I think he's wearing Uggs and
nice, body spray.
And he's got like a large scarf around his waist.
Does he have an orange handkerchief in his back pocket?
No.
Oh, okay. Too bad.
Which one's that for?
That means you're into anything.
Oh, okay. I don't think he does. I don't want to watch it again just to find out.
I understand.
You know why? Because this movie's boring.
Yeah.
As much as I'm a fan of people getting killed with big swords, there's only so much of it I can watch before
you decide you've been bored?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because there's nothing really clever or exciting about the movie.
See, I was sufficiently bored I didn't want to see it to start with. And then I was bored by the original.
Well, no one's saying you shouldn't have been.
And no one, you know, promised me a pimp at this show, so I wasn't going.
Well.
So, what's the premise of this Conan film, other than being a badass?
It's a Conan film. It hasn't got a premise.
The first one does.
The guy from Avatar, the bad guy from Avatar, wants to resurrect his wife through an evil mask and some chick's blood. And so Conan has to stop him by killing everyone. Which is pretty much the movie.
That's pretty exciting.
And so he just kills people. And that's pretty much it. So if you're into that, then you should see this movie. If you're not, then...
Well, it appears very few people were.
Yeah, it's bombed, which isn't surprising since there's really no name in it besides Conan. I mean, the actor's nobody cares.
Well, I think the
director,
problem, yeah, well,
even less
the problem
care.
Is, I think now is, you see Conan, you think it's O'Brien. I don't think people think of this... muscle-bound guy anymore. They think of a bad red-haired comic.
It's also worth noting that in the original movie adaptation, they actually didn't follow the Conan story particularly. They actually brought in a whole bunch of Robert Howard stuff, up to and including the big bad guy.
They didn't bring in Pigeons from Hell.
But the bad guy in that is Thulsa Doone, who is, of course, not a Conan bad guy. He comes from the Call of the Conqueror series. So it's like they basically, it's just sort of like everything good that Howard kind of ever wrote in that kind of barbarian vein, all kind of crammed into one. I mean, really, it's about the best movie you're going to get out of that material.
Barbarian lit. I like this.
And I would probably have preferred, as much as I don't care about Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's probably better than Jason Momoa, who I just can't
I ain't gonna
buy
argue
being
that. I
from,
mean, yeah, get a little
I can buy, I think it's, I can buy Arnold as a barbarian more than this big Austrian than this big American oaf. Like,
I'm good with that. I also don't care much one way or the other, because you're right. That's going
to
be gone soon.
Oh, tell us a little bit about Tabloid.
A little bit about Tabloid,
the movie, Tabloid. Not
Tabloid, the movie, not the product, the Tabloid, yes. Which Tabloid is a documentary, which is that rarest of things. It's a funny documentary.
Right.
By the renowned Errol Morris.
What has he done? Well, I see renowned.
Thin Blue Line is he's generally considered the bee's knees of documentarians.
Yeah.
By people who think about documentarians, and they're usually pretty strange anyway.
The knees
so.
Of bees.
That's right. Anyway, and what he has done is he has dredged up, and it was surprisingly accidentally timely to do this, because now the American public, who 6 months ago would not have some kind of idea of just exactly how sleazy British tabloid journalism is. News of the World scandal brought this to the forefront. And this is not about News of the World, it's about the Daily Express and the Daily Mirror. And they're going to war over this American woman who describes herself as an all-American girl, who sometime in the mid-late 70s decided that the Mormon church was a good place to cruise for nice clean-cut guys. And she found this guy that she fixated on and managed to weasel her way into his affections. And they were all set to get married, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. Well, she, according to herself, did what any American girl would do. She set out to find him. And what she found was that he was had been sent on one of those Mormon mission things to England. So she managed to put together a crack team of amateurs to go with her to England to rescue him from the Mormon cult. Well, the bodyguard dropped out the first day. The pilot dropped out very shortly thereafter. So all that she was left with was herself and this clueless boob who followed her around, hoping that one day she would notice him, which she never did. And they kidnapped, maybe, this guy and took him to a cottage in Devon and chained him to a bed, or tied him to a bed, or didn't do anything to him to a bed, where she proceeded to have sex with him for 3 days.
Nonstop?
I don't know.
Okay.
This was her idea of deprogramming him. Well, somehow or other, this all gets very public and very confused and very conflicting, and the truth will never be known. She claims that she was rescuing him. He claims that he was abducted and raped, and it became a tabloid sensation. The Daily Express more or less took her side as the wronged woman, and the Daily Mirror painted her as this wanton harlot. So it became kind of a media war between the two sleaze brags. And the film is told entirely from the point of view of her, the pilot who bailed out, an editor from The Express, and an editor from The Daily Mirror. The object of her obsession wisely refused to be involved in this. The long-suffering schmuck died a few years ago, so he's out, and an earlier boyfriend can't be located. It is the most preposterous story you have ever heard, and I've only touched on how preposterous it gets before it's over. Before this movie is over, it will involve pit bull cloning. And beyond that, I will say no more. It is incredibly entertaining in a jaw-droppingly vile sort of manner.
Much like Ken Henge.
Yeah, very much, very much, yes. A Better Life is a swell film, and I mean that quite seriously. It is an extremely good film from Chris Weitz. It's the best thing he's done since About a Boy. Of course, the only thing he's done since About a Boy is The Golden Compass, which isn't a bad film, and one of those goddamn Twilight movies, I don't even care which one. So that's really not saying as much as I should say, because it really, this is a film I did not have no interest in seeing. It's got a stupid, generic, god-awful crap title. I mean, there must be at least six movies called A Better Life. And of those, four of them probably deal with illegal aliens trying to make a way for themselves in the United States. It has a bad trailer, no stars, and no reason that you could imagine you would want to see this movie. Well, it turns out it's actually really good. And I was definitely primed not to like it because I had made one trip halfway to the theater to see the press screening, only to get a phone call to say that the print wasn't here and we were going to do it the next day. And then I had to go back the next day to see this, only to get here and find there was nobody at the theater for 20 minutes beyond the time the movie was supposed to start. I wasn't in the best frame of mind to like this movie, but the movie itself turned out to be just surprisingly compelling drama. Now, it looks like it's going to be standard illegal immigrant in America thing. It's all about this guy who's making a living as a gardener. He wants to make a life for his son, who was born in America, and keep him out of the gangs, which he's only like a step away from being in. And he has this situation where his boss, who is a legal immigrant, I guess, wants to sell him his truck and his equipment because he's managed to make enough money to go back to Mexico to his farm. Well, he doesn't have the 12 grand for this, but his sister gives it to him, and he's reluctant to take it because if he were to get stopped, he has no driver's license, he has no papers, he's one stop away from being deported, essentially. But he goes with it, and of course, the first thing that happens is this guy that the guy had shown him a kindness. So as a kindness, he hires him from the group of day laborers. And within, 15 minutes, the guy's stolen his truck and his stuff. But it turns out the guy actually has his reasons too. This is one of the interesting things about the film is that there aren't really any villains in it. And I think that works very much in its favor.
Well, unless you just hate illegal immigrants.
They're all villains. Yes, but I'm not of that mindset. And then it becomes, once the truck is stolen, it essentially becomes a modern American variation on De Sica's The Bicycle Thief. It turns out it's very surprisingly entertaining. Parts of it are exciting, and it's actually quite moving. And it does this without being preachy, and I think that might be why it's quite moving. I never felt like it was trying to make me, it wasn't trying to manipulate me to feel bad for these people, because you actually got to know the people and you did feel bad for them, not because they were emblematic of something bigger, though they are, but just because the movie had made them have the illusion of being real. So I very much recommend this movie, and I know no one's going to go see it because it has nothing to draw them outside of me saying go see this movie. And one day is Lone Scherfig's new film, the follow-up to An Education. I like her. I like her cast. I like Anne Hathaway. I like Jim Sturgess. I think the idea is interesting. where you drop in on this couple. They're not necessarily together. And people seem to think this is like same time next year. It has nothing to do with same time next year. This is not the people who meet once a year. This is just where they happen to be once a year for 20 years. And the idea is interesting, and it mostly works. But there's something about this that just isn't quite there. Maybe it's the fact that the Jim Sturgess character is pretty much of a douche, and it's really kind of hard to get away from that. I'm not sure. I don't know what the problem with it is exactly, because ultimately I like the film, but I never loved it, and I wanted to love it. And it also has Return of the King-itis. It gets to the end, and it could have ended 3 or 4 times. And every time you think it's ended, here we go. Something else is dragged in. And so it just, you know, becomes tedious in that regard. But I don't want to give the impression that I thought it was a bad movie. It's not a bad movie. It's just not a great movie. It's not even a very good movie. It's just a good movie. It should have been so much better. Well, you're going to tell us about Spy Kids, are you?
I can.
Well, I should hope so. Well, yeah, you're our Rodriguez expert.
It's easily the best kid movie Rodriguez has made since Spy Kids 2. I'd say it's better than Spy Kids 3D. Much better than Shorts.
Most things are better than Spy Kids 3D.
Right. I didn't mind Spy Kids 3D all that much. I'd also seen it before I saw the first two Spy Kids, though.
I might have some bearing,
But, I mean, I haven't looked at any reviews since earlier in the weekend, but it's pretty much getting panned, I think. I don't know what it's at this point.
I think
it
may have gotten less panned than Fright Night and Conan. No, Fright Night got the best reviews.
Right.
And Conan or One Day.
But I think there's a tendency to, like, oh, it's another Spy Kids movie, it's dumb. And it is dumb, but it's a kids movie. Like, it's cheesy, but it's agreeably cheesy. But it's not completely stupid. It's not a dumb kid. I mean, there's stuff in it, like the whole aromascope gimmick, which is just scratch and sniff cards, is not really used that well. It just sort of pops up here and there.
Well, what supposed aromas does it possess?
Blue cheese, which smells like cherries. There's a dog fart that smells like cherries. There's vomit, I think, that smells like cherries. There's a good mint.
That smells like cherries?
No, it smells like mint. The other one. Except the thing on screen I don't think was mint. I don't know what it was. I couldn't tell what it was.
In polyester, the fart smelled like a propane leak.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was my scratch and sniff card was faulty.
Defective,
I don't know.
Yes. But soaked in cherry.
Yes, but it was kind of, it was just there. It wasn't, didn't really add to the movie. It was an afterthought, and it didn't really tie into the film at all. Which is probably, I mean, once it comes to DVD, it's probably a good thing. I mean, I doubt they're gonna have scratch and sniff cards.
You should swipe a bunch of the cards now so you'll be ready.
Yeah. But it's fun, and it's well made, and the cast is really good. I mean, it's not as good. I mean, Jessica Alba's no Antonio Banderas, of course, but...
Well, no.
But the kids they have at Spy Kids now are good. You get to see Alexa Vega and the other kid.
Daryl Sabara.
Yeah. They show up, and they're good, and it's nice to see them get work. So... And the whole point of the film, and it's like the other Spy Kids film, it's a movie about family. And it doesn't forget about that. And I mean, it's sort of in the same vein as a lot of these movies where it's like, I'm a workaholic dad.
Yeah,
I need to spend more time.
A lot of those, yeah.
It has a little bit of that, but it's more developed. And it's more, there's more resonance there. I think when you find out why the villain is being villainous, one, you can't blame him, and two, it's a completely understandable reason, and there's some, like, a little bit of impact there. I mean, it's handled pretty well, like, emotionally, I think.
Okay.
And so, I was fine with it. I enjoyed it. It's not great, but...
I shouldn't, like, beat a path to it or anything?
No. I don't think if you watched it, you would be pained.
Sometimes that's all you can ask for.
Though I
did,
I wanted to bring this up. I saw somebody, some guy was looking at the banner that's downstairs for it, and was talking about Joel McHale. I was like, why is he in this? And I wanted to be like, look, George Clooney was in the first one. I don't want to hear, why is this guy that has a sitcom with Chevy Chase in this movie?
Oh.
Nobody's too good for a
Spy
Kids movie.
Thank you for explaining it to me, because I had no idea who the hell Joel McHale is.
He's on TV. He's not too good for a Spy Kids movie. Nobody's too good for a Spy Kids movie, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe I'm too defensive about Spy Kids. But.
Well, I can't understand why you would be defensive of some person who's known for a TV show.
Obviously, he's not a big Spy Kids fan as we are.
Fright Night is a perfectly fine vampire picture. It's a good remake of a perfectly okay vampire picture from 1985 that was also called, amazingly enough, Fright Night. It's very similar. It follows the same plot trajectory.
Is there a movie called Night Fright?
No, there's not.
Because we should make that.
We should.
We should have made it before this came out.
That's true. Well, since this is pretty much tanked, I think that probably is not a good idea at this time.
Everything pretty much tanked this weekend.
Yes, it did. It was not a good week for the movies. This is changed in some regard. There is quite a difference in the approach to Colin Farrell's approach to the vampire is very different from Chris Sarandon's vampire in the 1985 film. There are some differences in characterization all along the way. The Peter Vincent vampire hunter has been movie star, TV horror host has been turned into a sleazy Vegas magician, which makes sense because, I mean, you know, even in 1985, the TV horror host was pretty much a nostalgic thing. There really weren't many of them, and if they were, they mostly were of the Elvira school of make fun of the movie, which of course has subsequently degenerated into Mystery Science Theater 3000 and riff tracks and things that are just too vile to even consider.
Who's that guy that was on USA?
Commando Cody?
Joe Bob Briggs.
Oh, Joe Bob Briggs, yeah. Okay.
Did he make fun of the movies?
No.
Yeah.
Not exactly. Not in the same way.
He wasn't Elvira-like in that. But, I mean, he would definitely give commentary.
He seemed informative, though.
Yeah, and his whole thing was he seemed sort of a drive-in guy. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, he really liked the movies, but he would also talk about how bad they were.
Anyway.
So, I mean, turning him into this Vegas character, he's also very funny. He's.
I think we should get Ken.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody.
WLOS.
I don't honestly think that I have ever seen anyone with an alcoholic addiction to Midori, which he has. How much melon liqueur can a person drink, is my question, without becoming violently ill from the sugar content? He's funny. He's utterly a fake in this. I mean, he is, you know, has fake hair, fake tattoos, fake sideburns, fake mustache, fake piercings. He wears leather all the time and complains about this awful rash trying to scratch his crotch through a leather outfit. I mean, it's pretty funny.
And this is the David Tennant character.
Right? Yeah, it's a David Tennant character. Yeah. And
Doctor Who, yes. Doctor Who?
Smack him. I give you a dollar.
No, I'd get it up front,
yeah.
Honestly.
Okay.
On the barrel head.
So Doctor Who is funny.
Yeah, I mean it's entertaining. Which is all it really sets out to be. I mean, it's entertaining. I enjoyed it. I probably will never see it again. I thought it was marginally better than the original. And, there's really nothing more to say about it. I mean, nobody seems to have been real interested in going to see it. I didn't bother seeing it in 3D. I can't imagine
nobody
why.
Nobody saw it in 3D.
Oh, okay. So, I guess that's why.
There was exactly zero tickets sold to it in 3D yesterday.
Makes sense to me.
I'm hoping this means 3D's over.
Well, what's the Thursday Horror Picture Show? Where is the Thursday Horror Picture Show? Where is that?
It's in the Cinema Lounge.
Where's that?
At the Carolina Asheville.
Oh, where we are now.
Hendersonville Road.
Astonishing. And it's on Thursday.
Yes.
Yes, it's on Thursday night, yes. And it's free. Yes, free. Uh-huh. And it costs you nothing. It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Which we're showing Edgar Wright's Shaun of the Dead this week.
Which I haven't seen in so long that I have no opinion of it.
Right. Well, the whole reason for me wanting to show it was to give me an excuse to watch it and to find a copy of it.
Now you get to watch it twice.
Yes. And I will happily say that I won't. That's not an issue. Because the first time I saw it, it was all this hype around it. Never actually played Asheville. I think Greenville. I had friends that went to Greenville to see it. And, I finally caught up with it when it came in on DVD. And I remember liking it for a while until... But I had this feeling it just sort of devolved into a regular old zombie movie. And so I wasn't too wowed with it. Now that I've gotten more familiar with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and Edgar Wright as a director... I want to say it almost lives up to its reputation. I think there's a tendency, if you like zombies, you'll like this movie more. I think Ken and I are both
kind of zombie
tragically
out.
Over
zombified, yeah.
Yes. Because that's just how we are. And but I mean, like all zombie movies, it's not really about the zombies. It's about the people. And in this case, it's not like a big social commentary. It's just about this guy who kind of just screws up all the time. Not majorly, but a little bit here and there. Being stuck in this position where he tries to take control and still sort of screws up. But and also about his friends and his family and all this stuff. It gets a little too sentimental at times, but at least it's trying. I think is how I feel about it. Being a little bit more than just a comedy.
I'll be interested in seeing it.
And I mean, it's Wright's direction is for a debut. I mean, it's pretty assured. I think they've all made better stuff than this, but.
No, I'll give it a shot.
Yes.
I mean, I don't have a choice, actually.
Good. Maybe you'll love it.
Maybe I will.
Maybe seeing it with a crowd will.
It may help. It may make me decide that we need to run King of the Zombies with Mantan Moreland, too.
Okay.
And the Asheville Film Society, which is on Tuesday, in the same damn place as the Thursday Horror
and
Picture Show, except it's on Tuesday, and the same damn time. And we are concluding our Paramount series with the Marx Brothers, the four Marx Brothers, in Horse Feathers.
Carl,
yes,
Zeppo,
that's right.
And
Carl, Zeppo,
and Gummo.
Yes. And I forget who the fourth is.
Chuck.
No. I think the fourth one's name is really Young, but that's what, you know, it's... anyway, it is the fourth of the five Paramount Marx Brothers films. It is the second of their films made in Hollywood, and the second of their films to have no, the second of three films to have no romantic subplot. It is all Marx Brothers all the time. And it essentially is Groucho takes over a school as the head of a college, which how that could happen, I don't even want to think. And his son, played by Zeppo, who of course is actually only a few years younger than Groucho.
Well, it's amazing how young you look without a grease paint mustache.
That's true. It does take the years right off.
It's a
terrific Marx Brothers picture. Zeppo convinces Groucho to recruit football players to bring the Huxley team out of their dismal performance on the football field. So he tells him that the two greatest football players in the world hang out at a speakeasy. So Groucho goes to the speakeasy. And since Harpo and Chico hang out in the speakeasy, he just assumes that they're football players and signs them. Hijinks ensue.
Except they're actually funny hijinks.
They're actually funny hijinks. They actually
usually
do
ensue.
Usually
when we say hijinks ensue, we're usually being sarcastic.
That's true, and in this case we're not, because the hijinks actually do ensue, and they're amusing. So, come. Spend 68 minutes with us and see the four Marx Brothers at really close to the peak of their power in Horse Feathers. Well, we've already talked about
tabloid
a better life. So you know that, and that's opening this. They're both opening this Friday.
But we have Don't Be Afraid of the Dark
to kind of look forward to. Maybe don't have a lot of input on the director because all he's done is a short film. The short film is what got Guillermo del Toro to hire him to make this remake of a much loved by people who love it. TV movie from 1973 of the same title. It has been Del Toro'd in that the TV film had these little creatures haunting or trying to possess or whatever Kim Darby, who is at least marginally an adult. He's made it a child who is who they're after. I'm sure that whoever this child is, that she is a better actress than Kim Darby. It stands to reason. I don't know anything else to say about this film except that I'm interested.
So am I, but I won't get to watch it.
You get to watch it, you just don't get to review it. What are you complaining about? You get to review Columbiana.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about Columbiana?
I don't know what it's about.
Doesn't matter. It's an action movie made by Olivier Megaton, right, and produced by Luc Besson. It's interchangeable with any number of other action
Olivier
movies.
Olivier Megaton.
Sir. Olivier Lord Megaton.
Yes. Yeah.
It's an action picture.
Which I was worried because at first I thought he was the guy that directed Taken, which I thought was dumb, but everybody else loved. But no, he's the guy that made Transporter 3.
Yes.
Which is dumb, but knows it's dumb.
Which was also produced by Luc Besson.
Which is much preferable.
Yes.
So maybe on
Taken might have been produced by Luc Besson too, come to think of it.
I think he does everything that's set in Europe that has guns in it.
Yes.
And car chases.
Or our children's movies, because he does all those Arthur movies that after the first one have never been imported.
Wow.
So, anyway, we've got that, and then we have the four-waller-looking thing called The Caller.
Yes.
Which is some R-rated horror film.
Is it The Caller or The Caller?
Caller, okay. as in phone call, not as in dog call.
It sounded like you were from Andrews. The Caller.
You will pay for that. And then we have Our Idiot Brother.
Our Idiot Brother?
It says it's Our Idiot Brother. That's the title. I guess that means Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Got a poster next week.
Yep. Steve lying in a field of grass with his legs up. Boy, that actually conjures an image I didn't intend.
You're going to run barefoot through his hair, Ken?
No, I don't think so. Maybe. We'll see. Maybe he washes it first.
I guess that's it. Is that what we have?
That's what we have. And that's Paul Rudd as Our Idiot Brother.
We didn't tell anybody what The Caller was about.
It's about 100 minutes long.
Well, it's about this girl who moves into an apartment and gets calls from the past.
The past.
From some crazy woman who starts killing people in
Well,
the
it's
past.
Only because she stops talking to her. This makes the old lady peevish.
Horror. You get caller ID.
That's the whole problem.
You're getting a phone call.
We didn't tell anybody what
our
idiot brother was about either.
I think it's obvious. It's about somebody's idiot brother.
Yes, but I believe it's very gumpified. He's going to disrupt their lives. Only it's going to turn out that he's really more tuned in to what matters than his sisters are.
That's why idiots are in charge of everything, Ken. Don't you understand? That's why things run so smoothly.
Well, it's like that whole idea that, you know, that idiots are that idiots are nicer than smart people, of which I have never seen any evidence whatsoever. But the movies, God love them, like to sell that little bit of pablum. And I guess that's all that we have to say.
It looks like it.
I think we're done. I'm done. Are you done?
I'm done.
Yeah,
Steve,
we're both done.
Are you done? Yeah, man.
You finished?
Yep.
Okay. Well, then we're done. So, I'm Ken Hanke, and I work for the Mount Express, and you are...
Justin Souther.
And
I also work for the Mount Express.
Yeah, and they are, as we...
I don't have a clever nickname like Ken, though.
So.
It's not my fault. I didn't. I tried to give you one.
Hanky panky over here.
Bite me.
I thought we were going with the Hank.
No, and we're not.
The Hank hanky. Once I learned a Peter Sellers impersonation, a Sir Guy Grand.
Yeah. Once you learn an impersonation, well, this isn't ever going to happen.
An aneurysm.
Yeah, I've never seen
an orgasm.
Attempt
something
a voice.
With an asm. Ken's having an asm.
Well, we won't go into that. It's been some time since I've had an asthma of any kind. Anyway, and as usual, we have to point out that the Mountain Express is made up of those paragons of virtue, those pillars of society.
Salt of the earth.
Those salt of the earth goat raisers that make this all possible. And in fact, bring you this podcast
completely free.
Completely
for
free.
All of us. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, none of us have seen a nickel out of this. That is.
Or a nipple.
Speak for yourself.
Well, you don't know about Steve.
Steve goes to bars and says.
That's true. And
listen
and,
to this. I did
and,
this.
And but they are also the ones who give us.
You want to come back to my apartment and listen to some podcasts?
Yeah. Erotic podcasts, and that's yes. Okay. Anyway, they're also the ones who give us the parenthetical.
What an erotic
Steve.
Podcast! Can we add a bunch of heavy breathing into the background?
Oh yeah. Okay. Now, Steve, talk dirty to me, Shanafelt, as our coherer, producer, and the poor boob who puts up with us.